You know, if I'm schwitzing all over the place up here, you know, it's obviously that's sweating for you guys that aren't from New York. I obviously wore the wrong attire, and I'm melting as we speak, so. Whew. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I want to say welcome to the newcomers. I want to say that there's a lot of people in the room tonight, so obviously that the noise levels is not going to be quiet, so I'm just going to talk over whatever goes on in here. I want to say to the newcomers, as my friend Paulie always says, and this is in all seriousness, you are off the hook. Okay, if it's your fifth white chip or your 500th white chip, the white chip you receive tonight could be your last white chip, one day at a time. You're off the hook. And I remember when I heard that 15 years ago in this very room from the guy, like I just said, who happens to be sitting in this room, and I heard him say that I was off the hook, I took a sigh of relief. Because I felt like I was home. So if you're here tonight, welcome home. Welcome home. You have your seat. You claim your seat. Put that white chip in your pocket, or if you didn't pick up a white chip tonight, if you picked up a white chip in the last 30 days, put that white chip, put it in your pocket, hold that white chip like it's the most important thing in your life, because that hopefully that'll be the last white chip you ever pick up. Last week we were doing step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And if you were here for last week, we had a good time, didn't we? We had a good time, right? I'm not sure if it was exactly the best fourth step that was ever done from this podium, but it definitely was a good time. I mean, I had some feedback. I wouldn't actually say it was all complimentary. You know, one guy from our home group, Armin, who happens to live up in Massachusetts now, I called him and I asked him what he thought of it, and he asked me to call him back with a pen and paper. That's exactly what he did. I'm not exaggerating. He told me to call him back with a pen and paper. I didn't call him back. Anytime anyone says call you back with a pen and paper, that's not going to be good. My sponsor said it was the worst fourth step he's ever heard in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe you an apology. It was rough. But you know, I text messaged him back, and I said it was the best fourth step that I could do last week. Oh, it's good to see you. Okay, you guys are back? Good. You know, tonight is very special for me. I want to give you a little background. I grew up in this specific room. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous down here in Florida when I was 25 years old, and I grew up in this room and the back room. I grew up in the back room of the 11-step group. Someone tonight picked up a medallion from the 11-step group. That was my home group for 7 years. And then I grew up in this room. The first speaker that I ever saw doing the 12 steps, the first person doing what I'm doing up here right now, a person that I watched over the last 15 years, that tried not to miss any time that he was speaking, is Paul, that happens to be here in the room. And I'm not saying that to make him feel uncomfortable. I'm saying that growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous, watching somebody like the men that are in this room and the ladies inside this room and a gentleman like Paul, and then being up here while he's over there, you know, no pressure. I'm fine. I'm sure I'll do a great job. Yeah, no pressure. I'm good. I also want to say that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to become a man and how to be a man. Alcoholics Anonymous also taught me that during the years when I was here and I was watching Paulie doing the steps, every single time he did the steps, his closest friends came. It was like a reunion. And Paul's best friend, who passed away last year of cancer, a lot of you guys know, is Maurice. Incredible man in Alcoholics Anonymous. Maurice had this gift of always making you feel welcome, even if he's only met you once. And so Spike, who happens to be sitting here also, is the first person that invited me to go out to dinner with Paul and Maurice. And Spike met me when I was a year and a half sober, and or sober for this table right here, sober. And Spike had a three year. He had three bars on his chest. He had a three. I want to tell you, Bill, all these guys, I met him in Narcotics Anonymous, okay? So you're not going to lose your card if you're in this meeting. No one's going to rat on you. You won't lose your NA card, I promise. Don't, none of you girls, Jenny, don't be ratting on Bill, all right? Don't tell anybody who's in here. He's not allowed to be in here. So I meet Spike, and he's got a three on his chest, three gold bars. Now, I don't know what those three gold bars are. I'm brand new, and he tells me, "Stevie, come out to dinner with us tonight, and someday this could be yours." He shows me the three bars. I didn't know what those three gold bars were, but I wanted them, I'm going to tell you. And we went out to dinner across the street. Whenever Paul Lee would speak in town, it was always Bruce Springsteen, and it was incredible. And we went across the street to, I'm telling you this for a reason. Alcoholics Anonymous is more than just a program, and it's more than just a way to get sober. It's a way of life for a lot of us. My years that I can tell you from my first year to my seventh year, then my relapse, and now back to coming up to my eighth year, all have to do with time markers and events that I remember in my sobriety. And that was at a year and a half when I first saw Paul Lee doing the steps. That was the first week, and then the second week I had dinner with them across the street at Anthony's. Listen, I remember the plate of food that I ate that night. I remember that Maurice said, "Get the mussels. You eat the mussels." We eat mussels before we see Paul Lee talk. I ate the mussels. And then we came over here and we all sat. And like Brian Ade said tonight. Where's Brian? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's changed my life. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous are some of the finest people that I've ever met in my life. Now, those of you that know me personally know that I do other meetings. You know, we have other meetings and outside fellowships. And I know some of you guys from Monday night meeting and Wednesday night meeting. And some of you guys, we do church together. And I love that stuff, too. On Saturday, on Friday night, I go over to a Cocaine Anonymous, which is kind of neat because you can say anything you want. And they still use the big book. I love that meeting. It's like crack. Okay, Alcoholics Anonymous, big book. I love it. You got it all. One time I was in there, I never even heard of this. I'm like, "I shot crack." And everyone clapped for me. I was like, "Great." Just made it up. They love that in that meeting. St. Francis Friday night. Just could say anything you want. And then you pick up the big book. It's in the big book. I love CA. It's amazing, this program. I say all that to say this. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. For those of you guys that were at the Beach Bash this Saturday, none of us are going to stay in here and be content in here and have longevity in here if we're not enjoying ourselves. One of the people who picked up her 18-year medallion tonight, when I first met her, always smiling, and always talking in the meeting, but always having a great time, and always showed me joy. No matter what, through hard times, through sickness, through people relapsing around her. This is not just about, you know, being up here doing the steps. Let me tell you something about the steps. The steps are amazingly outlined in the two books that you should own, one of which is the 12 and 12, and the other one is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing new that I'm going to tell you up here that isn't better outlined and described and put down right in black and white in those books. If you didn't hear the greatest fourth step last week, and you couldn't have because I was up here and it wasn't, what tells you how to write the fourth step, what shows you the four areas of fear, resentments, wrongs done others and sexual harms caused others, what shows you all about that is these two books. You can't be in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and not own and read the textbooks of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said in the first week, then you're just in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. These two books in this specific program help shape our lives. If you're in other fellowships, those books help shape your lives in those other fellowships. And if you're in church or temple, hopefully you're reading the books while you're there in those places. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave, which means extremely bad. When they write down infinitely grave, they mean infinitely grave. They go on to say in the next chapter that resentment is the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything else. Me resenting you is like me taking poison, pouring it down my throat, and expecting you to die. You know what I do about resentments today? I pray for the person. We have a person in our neighborhood who's a respected person in Alcoholics Anonymous. When people get up to the podium, they talk about this guy like this guy is amazing. Now I happen to live next to him. I want to tell you, this guy is as far from amazing as I've ever met in my life. He's so far away from amazing, it's not even the same sentence. He's restless, irritable, discontent, and miserable. And out of 81 homes that live in our little community, 4 of them like him. Let me tell you something. He's trying to take our dogs away, our only children. Let me tell you another thing. I don't have an ounce of resentment for him. Because my wife and I spend a lot of time praying for him. A lot of time. He's at the top of our prayer list every day. Him and his wife and his family and his well-being and his business. Because if I don't pray for him, I will want to do something other than Ted. And anytime I find some person, place, thing unacceptable to me, I have to do the work. Me expecting something bad to happen to him creates sickness in me. So I write that down on my 4-step. I write down my resentments. I write down my harms. I get it down on paper. You know, we spend our whole lives running away from the stuff we've done, and then we get into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever program that you're in, and we find out that when it comes to this step, here's where we have to do some work. Listen, we made a decision to come in, then while we're here, we make a decision that we can't do it on our own, and then step 3, we make a decision to turn our life and our will over to the Creator. But step 4 comes, we got to do some work. We actually got to write down the stuff we've been burying our entire life. The stuff that I blamed you for. Guy, trying to take my dogs? I got to write that down. What did I do? Where am I to blame in this? We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. You know, when my sponsors call me up and they say, I got to tell you what this girl did, or I got to tell you what this guy did. What is your part in it? We're always going to be harmed. Attention, Mike. This is not Well People's Anonymous. I don't know if you look around. I mean, we would ordinarily not mix. That means people are going to harm you in this room and outside this room. So we write it down. We write down our fears. Oh, man, I don't want to write down my fears. I'm afraid to write down my fears. I certainly don't want to share this with anybody. Here's what's going to help you with your fears. We never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. Oh man, that's going to help me with my fear. I better write that down. Okay, it's about God. Okay, Paul, now about sex. Here we go about sex. Now, here's the thing about sex. You came at a perfect time, my friend. Absolutely perfect time. Perfect. Here's what I want to tell you about sex. Danny, I hope you're listening. It's about sex. God alone can judge our sex situation. God alone can judge our sex situation. We have to go to the Creator on this one. Because my sponsor and I don't specifically agree on this. And other men that I hang out with, we don't necessarily agree. I can't go to Don and ask him about his sex conduct. I want to go to the Creator on this one. However, while I'm writing down my fourth step, I certainly can use this. Where I have been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. Whom had we hurt about sex? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? I certainly can use that as a chart. Now I know what to write down. Now, after I get all that, after I get it all on paper, after I get all the stuff that I've been trying to hide for the last 38 years on paper, here we go. It says, having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We get all that down. We write it down. And then it tells us the thing that we were hoping we would never see. Admit it to God. Okay, I did that. To ourselves, I've been writing it. But wait, no, not that line. And to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. See, I'm okay going to Father with that. I'm okay going to my rabbi with that. I'm okay to go to my priest with that. But now I gotta like pick a sponsor who's as defective and degenerate probably as me. My sponsor lives out in San Francisco, as well as you guys know Russell down here. And he says to me, I need you to fly out to San Francisco. I'm living with Mason and Eddie, my two closest friends, and Anthony. The three of us are like the four amigos, Anthony and these two guys. And I'm living with my sponsor. He says, you need to fly out to San Francisco. You need to do your fifth step with me by the ninth month of your sobriety before you move back in with your wife. I said, fine. And now he paints this picture for me. He's like, we're going to go to the mountains. In San Francisco. I'm going to take you up to the Redwood Forest. Now, he's a Jewish man who teaches in yeshiva, so we don't share the same faith, but he says, I'm going to take you to the cross. And we're going to go in front of the cross, because there's a cross on top of this mountain. I'm going to take you in front of the cross, and you're going to tell me everything. You're going to tell me all your defects. We're going to share it with me. You're going to share everything with me. And I'm going to give it to God, and then when you leave that mountain, you're going to be free. I go, okay, Jerry, that sounds good. And I get on a plane, and I travel across country. And a friend of ours, another guy that we live with, Todd, his father gets me first class tickets because if I'm going to share my fifth step, I want to travel in style. I'm not going no coach to share my fifth step. I got to get a little pampering before I go. And plus, Justin, I hadn't finished writing it, so I needed to write it on the way over. Kind of like you, 2 years writing the fourth step. So on my way over... On my way over, I'm writing the fourth step. I'm eating cookies and I'm having first class section. And then I call Myron because Myron calls me. My phone rings. My Myron calls me because I'm touched down in Houston to do the transfer. And I say, Myron, what's up? I'm on my way to San Francisco. And he says to me, Danny just died. My closest friend in the program. He went in for the surgery. The stomach surgery and dies. Now I'm sitting in there grounded, and I wasn't prepared for that. He called me. I figured it was something. I didn't know what it was. I called. He says Danny died. I start weeping. I start crying. I call Russell. I call my spot. I reach out to both coasts, and I'm all over the place, and then I call Mason and Eddie, because those are the guys I lived with in that halfway house, because those are the guys I relied on, because the people that you surround yourself, it's very important. Not everyone that you surround yourself is going to have 25 years. Some of the guys that you surround yourself are going to have the same time as you. You need those guys too. You need guys that are with you, you need guys that are before you, and you need guys that are after you. And I call those guys, and I all that stuff, and I'll never forget, Jerry says to me, you don't drink. Because then the flight attendant, because the enemy is always going to present himself to you. Here he comes, King Alcohol. Would you like a drink? The flight attendant didn't ask me if I wanted a drink for 2.5 hours. Now I'm crying all over the place. Would you like a drink? Absolutely I would like a drink. But bring me a ton of cookies instead is what I said. And I'm crying and I'm eating cookies and Jerry tells me, you don't honor Danny's death by drinking. You honor Danny's death by staying sober and getting out here and doing your fifth step like you're supposed to. And teaches me at that moment how you handle death as a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober. And then I get to the second leg and I go out there and I go to this retreat in the mountains and I say, Jerry, I'm ready to go up to the cross. Jerry says, I have other plans for you. We're going to go to the beach. Have you ever seen the beach, the Pacific Coast Highway, the beach in California? No, I haven't seen it. He says, get in the car. We're going to the beach. Now, I don't know, but to me, the beach is going to have to be west because we're on the west coast. And if we're an inland, I would assume you have to go west to get to the coast of the beach. But he goes east. I don't know, maybe he's going to New York, but so he goes east. And we wind up in this town that is having a rodeo. And it doesn't look anything like the beach. I go, Jerry, I think we went the wrong way. He goes, yeah, we did. Go get the chairs. We're going to do it right here. I go, Jerry, there's a rodeo going on. He goes, go get the chairs. So I get the chairs. Now, there's people walking by with their dogs. And now, we're doing I'm telling him my deepest secrets. In between a light at the corner and the rodeo. And people are walking by. And I'm like, all right, Jerry, here's the sex harms caused other. And this one lady, she keeps walking by every 2 minutes with a dog. Every 2 minutes, waiting to hear the end of the story. And I'm thinking, this is not how I imagined it. But I get it out. Now, one of the things that I told Jerry in the fifth step, one of the things that I revealed to him in my sex harms caused other, I didn't think it was a big deal. So I kind of like threw it in at the end. We were all done. He says, is everything done? I go, everything's done. I go, but there's one more thing. And I just throw it at him, like as we're leaving this. It was a three-part fifth step. One was we did it at the corner of this thing where the rodeo was. Another one, we did it on an illegal property. Somebody said, no trespassing. He says, go over the fence. Put the chair there. I said, Jerry, it's an illegal place. He goes, put the chair there. I put the chair there. And then the last part was at the beach. In a little town, not the beach, not the ocean beach, but like a little stream. Put the chairs there. All right, I put the chairs there. And I told him something that I didn't think was a big deal. And I said, you know, I still partake in this. You know, I just threw it at him. I go, this area is not perfect still in my life. And, you know, we're walking with the chairs, and I think I'm done. We're walking with the chairs, and we're walking up to the car, and I go, by the way, Jerry, I still partake in that thing that I wrote. I told, he goes, put the chairs down. When you get back to Florida, you don't do that anymore. Oh, now I see. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being because we need the counsel of another human being. See, for me, it was no big deal. I've been doing it since I'm 11. I grew up that way. I'm from 47. My father took us to 42nd Street. When the Cub Scouts went to go see the Statue of Liberty, I was looking in the windows at 42nd Street. This is the way I grew up. I don't know anything about it. To me, this was normal behavior. Another human being. You see, what this says in here is that many of us choose to take this with someone in a religious denomination. A rabbi, a priest, a pastor, a shaman. Anyone other than you. Someone that's going to be able to look into this and say to you, you're whacked. Mike H., you're whacked. this is not acceptable. We don't do this. What do you mean we don't do this? Put it in my ear that we don't do this. Not if you want to stay sober, you don't do this. You see, searching in fearless moral inventory to me was the stuff that I knew about. Well, your sponsor knows how to tell you stuff that you don't know about. You write it down, and then if the sponsor's good, he's going to ask you, his or her is going to ask you questions, or the priest or whoever he goes to is going to ask you questions to find out what's really going on. Oh, okay, you would it, all right, but, And then here's the thing you've been carrying around your whole life that you thought was Aunt Sally's fault and Miss Betty that lived next to you over there, you find out, you know what? I had a part to play in this. What do you mean I had a part to play in this? This guy came over to my house, did this thing to me. Hopefully the person you do this is going to show you where you had a part to play. Now here's the whole beautiful thing about this. If you do this searching and fearless moral inventory, and then you get with the right person. I got with my sponsor. My guys get with me. Because if they're not willing to get with me, then it's really not a trustful relationship. I mean, if my guys don't feel comfortable telling me their darkest secrets, then there's not a lot that I can do in their lives. And then we would part ways from there. That's my opinion. That doesn't mean that's the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous or General Service. That's my opinion. If you can't share your fifth step with me, if I've done all I can do here in this situation, then hopefully right after that, you're going to know a new freedom. See, the thing that priests and rabbis and psychiatrists, the things that they know is that through confession, through leaving your stuff on the table, you ever seen why people on death row that don't believe in God, they need to make a confession? And then some of them, they do believe in God. A lot of them, hopefully they do. But some of them that don't, they still want to tell somebody. In that movie, that guy wanted to tell that mouse. Well, you want to tell whoever. You want to get that stuff off your chest. Now, let me tell you, after I shared this with Jerry, I walked out in that fifth step. We didn't go to the cross. We were on the side of the road on a patch of grass that was 5 feet by and in front of a light with people pulling up and walking in front of us. Then we went to an illegal property. Then we went to some little stream with litter. And that was the most beautiful stream I've ever seen. Because when I left there, that thing they talk about, that relationship with the Creator, I felt closer to God because I had bared my soul. I didn't have to take that with me anymore. I had a little spring in my step. I was like, oh man, Jerry, you're right. You're right. I'm so glad that I did the fifth step, because my first sobriety, the 7 years I was sober, I didn't really do a fifth step. And what I said, you know, it's almost like being halfway pregnant. I kind of did like a fourth and a half and then a partial fifth. I think I did the resentments, but I didn't do any of the other stuff. And I always was carrying around a weight. If you knew me really, if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. If you really knew what a degenerate I was, you wouldn't like me. Well, as far as the east is to the west, when I left that fifth step, I realized that my Creator loved me just perfectly at that moment. I couldn't have been any better at that moment. My sponsor said to me after he told me to pick up the chairs and put them in the car, he said, "Have you told me everything?" I said, "I have." He said, "Are you sure? Because when we go back over this in 6th and 7th, I'm going to ask you at 6th, did you do this?" I said, "You sure did. I sure did." Now, I'm sure that there's ways to do this where you do a fourth step and a fifth step every couple years. I don't know anything about that. I happen to do something called a tenth step, which means that when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. And promptly for me really means promptly. We're going to get into that in weeks to come. I don't do a fifth step and a fourth step every couple years. I don't know if that's the way to do it. You know, like I told you, I can never come up here and have 29 years of experience or 42 years of experience. I have 7 plus almost 8 years of experience. My experience in the last almost 8 years is that I had to do 1 4-step and 1 5-step. And I feel good. Now every day I screw up. And every day I take a 10-step. Well, hopefully every day I don't really take it every day, but I really want to do it every day. My intention is to do it every day. And I know that Tim does it every day and Armin does it, but I'm trying. I'm doing the best I can for this day. I want to leave this with you. You can't have a new freedom and a new happiness if you have all the old stuff that you're taking with you. Like I said in step 2, you need to leave the baggage at the door in order to have a new life. Thanks for letting me share.
One foot down.
Please bring up your tables. You must couple. And Terry,